Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Gurave Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. This week we're discussing Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna. And as we see, this is called the Advent of Lord Krishna Introduction. And as we said last week, that Prabhupada's introduction, preface and introduction to the Krishna book is based upon, especially verse 4 of this chapter 10 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and some of the initial introductory events and points. King Parikshit said, "My dear Lord, you have elaborately described the dynasties of both the moon god and the sun god with the exalted and wonderful character of their kings." And I guess because we've discussed some of those purports previously, we won't go over those.
And
yes, verse 17. Yes, so I'm just going to read these translations up to verse 17. And of course, at the end of this chapter, there is a whole section called Additional Notes, which actually, where they're relevant, I've actually put them near the verses that they're actually relating to. Text number 2. "O best of the Munis, you have also described the descendants of Yadu who were very pious and strictly adherent to religious principles. Now, if you will kindly describe the wonderful, glorious activities of Lord Vishnu or Krishna who appeared in that Yadu dynasty with Baladev, his plenary expansion." And there we discussed also how Baladev, he's also known as Sankirshan. He's also known as Ananta Sesha, who holds the planets and also the universes on the hoods of his head. And because they are Baladev, of course, although Sankirshan is an expansion of Balaram, and Sesha is an expansion of Sankirshan, but because they are the same person, they are, in fact, because they're the same person, they're the same form. And one should not consider one to be greater than the other. Prabhupada discusses that a little further on in this.
You mean Baladev, Sankarshan, and they are on the same category, you think? Or?
Balaram is the first expansion of Krishna. Mm. Balaram expands as the Chaturvyuha in Dwarka. Vasudev, Krishna, Sankirshan, Balaram, Baladev, Prajumna, and Aniruddha.
In Dwarka, right?
In Dwarka, yeah. So even Krishna outside of Vrindavan is known as Vasudev, part of the first Chaturvyuha. It is that Vasudev Krishna, who also from Dwarka, who appears at Kurukshetra. And we also have discussed that all of those personalities are within Krishna in Vrindavan, but the original form of Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan. But in Vrindavan, when Krishna kills the demons, he does so in his Vishnu or Vasudev feature, because they're all within Krishna. And And then from that second Chaturvyuha, the Sankarshana of the second Chaturvyuha, comes Narayan. And Narayan, there are many expansions of Narayan in Vaikuntha, and Narayan expands into the second Chaturvyuha, Vasudeva, Sankarshana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. And on one of those Vaikuntha planets of Narayan, Maha Vaikuntha, there is Maha Sankarshana, who expands as Mahavishnu, who expands as Kavadakshaya Vishnu, who expands as Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So, therefore, Balaram, as we heard here, he is, although he's not different from Sankarshan, he's the origin of Sankarshan, that is, otherwise they're the same person, and one should not consider one greater than the other. Prabhupada mentions that in reference to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that some people say that Rama in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra refers to Baladev, some people say it refers to Lord Ramchandra, and some people say it refers to Parashuram. And Srila Prabhupada points out that it is the same person and it is the same form. His form has unlimited version, but but it's the same form, it's the same person. Just like, for instance, Lakshmi, she's the consort of Lord Narayan, and Lord Chaitanya asked, why did Lakshmi spend some time separate from Lord Narayan performing austerities to attain the association of Krishna like the gopis had? And of course, the answer is because Lord Narayan is her husband, and Krishna is the same person. He's also, he is the same person, her husband, and a wife naturally wants to associate with her husband in all his different features. So in that sense, it's the same husband, the same form, but a different feature. So in this way, but as Prabhupada points out, one doesn't differentiate that Balaram, Lord Ramchandra, or Parashuram, we don't say that one is above the other, if they're Vishnu Tattva, because it's the same person. And he says that would be offensive. And I've mentioned this sometimes here, that even here sometimes in Melbourne and in other temples, when devotees worship Lord Ram Chandra on his appearance day, some devotees are a little hesitant, because we're devotees of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yes. And somehow we'd be, we're not going to show too much interest in Ram, because that may, cause us some, because we're actually devotees of Krishna. But Prabhupada says to distinguish like that is actually an offence. That's the offence. Anyway, so we discuss those. And we also discuss, therefore, that although Lord Krishna and Balaram, because Mahavishnu maintains the material universe, therefore they appear through him, because he is in charge. Oh, the avatars will come at this time, there's a problem here, we need like that. And therefore, Brahma always goes to Mahavishnu or Kshiradakshaya Vishnu when there is some disturbance in the planets and what have you, because Mahavishnu is in charge of maintenance or like that. So Krishna and Balaram are the full manifestations of the personality of God. So we discussed these plus a little extra today. So the Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, appeared in the dynasty of Yadu. Please tell me elaborately about his glorious activities and character from the beginning to the end of his life. glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the Parampara system, that is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except the butcher or one who is killing his own self?
In the text of now, where does it say scorcher? It's not false.
What's that?
It says it's false. What's temporary, that's
right. What's that?
The material the cosmic manifestation. It is temporary, that's fine, but it's not false, isn't it?
By those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic. Well, it's false, and it is false in the sense that it's temporary.
It's an illusion.
No, you're saying that the cosmic manifestation is false.
Yes.
It's an false glorification is false, that sort of thing.
Is it?
So there's nothing wrong. Now we say that the cosmic manifestation, we say that it is temporary, but we don't say it's false.
Yeah, false temporary glorification.
But
yeah,
glorification is false. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There you go. Good point. Yes. Yep. And then verses 5 and 7, taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather Arjuna and others crossed the ocean on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishma Dev resembled great fish that could very easily have swallowed them. By the mercy of the Lord Krishna, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which is very difficult to cross, as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord, Sudarshan Chakra in hand, entered her womb and saved my body, the body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and the Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashwatthama. Lord Sri Krishna appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings by his own potency in the forms of eternal time, that is, as Paramatma and as a Bharat Rupa, gave liberation to everyone either as cruel death or as life. Kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. And there we see that the appearance again further points that it's the right medicine to hear about Krishna, and we see how you know, Krishna personally saved the Pandavas and personally saved Parikit Maharaj from a situation which was impossible to be delivered from. So it's not only the right medicine, but to hear about Krishna, but, you know, he wants to hear about that person, you know, who has such wonderful qualities that everyone in this material world is in a dangerous situation, struggling, and therefore it's not just for the liberated persons, but anyone suffering the conditions of material existence needs to hear about Krishna. That's the point. My dear Sukadeva Goswami, you have already explained that Sankarshan, who belongs to the second quadruple, appeared as the son of Rohini named Balaram. If Balaram was not transferred from one body to another, how is it possible that he was first in the womb of Devaki and then the womb of Rohini? Kindly explain this to me. Why did Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father Vasudeva and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? Lord Krishna lived in Vrindavan and in Mathura. What did he do there? Why did he kill Kamsa, his mother's brother? Such killing is not at all sanctioned in the Shastras. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no material body, yet he appears as a human being. For how many years did he live with the descendants of Vrishni? How many wives did he marry? And for how many years did he live in Dwarka? O great sage, who know everything about Krishna, please describe in detail the activities of which I have inquired, and also those which I have not, for I have full faith and am very eager to hear of them. Because of my vow on the verge of death, I have given up even drinking water. Yet because I'm drinking the nectar of topics about Krishna, which is flowing from the lotus mouth of your lordship. My hunger and thirst, which are extremely difficult to bear, cannot hinder me. And so, you know, Parikkhita Maharaj is letting him know how eager he is. Don't worry about thirst, or don't, you know, think about me sitting here for 7 days, just keep speaking. I'm not interested in anything else but those topics. And of course, when that type of student is there, which we fortunately have in this class, and we're hearing these purports from Srila Prabhupada, then we have the right combination for the transcendental result. Sudha Goswami said, O son of Bhrigu, Shanaka Rishi, after Sukadeva Goswami, the most respectful devotee, the son of Vyasadeva, heard the pious questions of Maharaj Parikkhita, he thanked the king with great respect. Then he began to discourse on topics concerning Krishna, which are the remedy for all suffering in this age of Kali. And there's another reason. We're also in the age of Kali. And therefore, other methods of purification have no ability to hold back the tide of Kali. Sri Sukha Uvacha. So, Sukadeva Goswami said, O your majesty, best of all saintly kings, because you are greatly attracted to the topics of Vasudeva, it is certain that your intelligence is firmly fixed in the spiritual understanding, which is the only true goal for humanity. Because that attraction is unceasing, it is certainly sublime. So just that one has that inclination to hear these topics indicates that a person is liberated. As we read last, that's where we finished last week, we were discussing that Prabhupada says that even a person who has a slight inclination to hear these topics of Krishna Katha is liberated. And of course we discussed how that is by degrees. And Prabhupada mentions in verse 16, the Ganges emanating from the tail of Lord Vishnu purifies the three worlds, the upper, middle and lower planetary systems. Similarly, when one asks questions about the pastimes and characteristics of Lord Vasudev, Krishna, three varieties of men are purified, the speaker or preacher, he who inquires, and the people in general who listen. And as Vasudev explained that, Vishwanath Chakravarti describes that in this order of who gets the greatest benefit is the speaker, then the inquirer, and then the hearer. So sometimes, you know, so those who, just like the Bhakti Shastras that we're doing, means that, you know, people want to know all the answers, you know, Bhagavad Gita and that. So it means that their inquisitiveness, you know, means that they will, take up these courses over the temple, they also do them in, you know, the different Bhakti Bhiksha groups. They derive greater benefit than those who may just, you know, casually hear. But all of them, of course, you know, it is so potent that if they do it properly, that it would take all of them back home, back to Godhead. Yeah, and we got to text number 17, that once when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. Yeah, so in... it's important to note this, that we did discuss this a little bit previously in we were talking about the pastimes of Lord Balaram, that there are three different forms of Brahma. One on Satchaloka, what's the other one? One on Mount Meru, and the other one is the subtle form of Brahma. Comprising, in one sense, the subtle form of the universe with all the living entities. Aranyagarbha. So, it is not the Brahma on Satyaloka that they approached, because he was, what was he doing at that time? He was busy doing something else, the one on Satyaloka. There was something going on up there.
No, Krishna hadn't come yet.
Mm-hmm. Hadn't manifested. Ninth canto. The descendants of Vatan.
Oh, he was going to that concert.
There was a musical concert. There was a musical concert.
Yeah.
And which began in the Satya Yuga.
Yeah.
And I did the mathematics right.
Yeah,
it works out to be about 20 minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes.
Right. 20 minutes on their time took from Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and right to the end of Dwapara Yuga. And King Ravati's father had gone there to find a husband for his daughter. And in the time he was waiting for that music to finish, then Lord Brahma says, oh, you go to Earth now. Lord Balaram is the right person. And Krishna and Balaram, they've already taken birth. And therefore, so during that time, it couldn't have been him.
Which you're referring to here?
What's that?
Brahma who...
It couldn't have been the Satyaloka Brahma.
Who prayed to
the who Brahma went to in this here.
So
Brahma and the demigods, along with Bhumi, they've gone to Brahma.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But not in Satyaloka.
Not in Satyaloka.
They've gone to the one, his form on top of
Mount
Meru.
And this Hiranyagarbha form, where is it situated?
What's that?
The Hiranyagarbha form.
Hiranyagarbha is like literally the... A subtle form of the entire universe with all the living entities. It sort of comprises everything.
Even the creation as well? Or
so it's sort of a form of Brahma.
So is that part of the stem?
It's a subtle form of Brahma. It's his all-pervasive feature in a very subtle form. Because Brahma, we know that he's all-pervasive. Within the universe, he has consciousness throughout the whole universe, like that. And he's in a subtle form, which includes the universe and the living entities. It's called Hiranyagarbha.
Was it true that they were like very big, Revati and her father? They say that they were like giants when they approached Krishna and Balaram. Were they really huge?
I don't know. I haven't heard that detail.
It's in the movies.
It's in the movies, is it?
Oh, is it?
No, what? Yeah. Probably. Is it? You've said, yeah. Right. So it's quite possible. I haven't heard that detail.
Okay. Yeah.
What's that?
I don't know if it's a true.
I heard it in a lecture from Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah.
He's put it on his lectures. That's how I heard the whole story.
So in the Puranas, there's more detail about these events. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a revised edition of one of the 18 Puranas called the Bhagavat Purana, and that which is conducive for our understanding of the different tattvas and that which is and for tasting rasa, that is there. Some of the other information in the Puranas is not required in order to understand tattva and rasa, and therefore not needed to make the book too voluminous. And some of it is also for the understanding of those who do not understand Krishna as the personality of Godhead, but tend to read about Krishna, you know, without a lot of differentiation between him and the different demigods, or sometimes even ordinary, just great personalities. So not everything that is there is in here, yeah. But there are, you know, many stories about, you know, extra details in some of the various Puranas, Upanishads, Vedas, and different writings of great saintly persons like Parashurama Muni, Garga Muni, like that.
All Brahmas are same Brahma, right? Expansions.
Same person. But yeah. And you know, they have that ability to appear, you know, in a particular form for other purposes. They can be in one place and they have the ability in an amsa or an expansion to be somewhere else performing another. And we'll hear a little bit about this as the different demigods appear within the families. We'll hear about how they do that, and why they do that. And we'll cover that same point a little bit more in a moment. And of course, so as we move into here, Prabhupada is saying in his purport to verse 16, since the Krishna consciousness movement is full of Vasudeva Katha, anyone who hears, anyone who joins the movement, and anyone who preaches will be purified. And therefore, as we heard before, what we learn in our classes, if we try and explain that to others, we get the maximum benefit. Even if it's a very simple explanation, and even if it's a very simple attempt, you get the maximum benefit of Krishna Gita when you help others to understand it. And that we can all do. Now, so, that...
Yes, 16th.
That's in Prabhupada's purport, right? Since the Krishna consciousness movement is full of Vasudeva Katha,
yes.
Right? And then the one about the reminder about Brahma, that was in the Vishvanatha Chakravarti, the cause commentary to verse 17. I'm going to read a few verses and then I'm going to come back to this point. Text 18. Mother Earth assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. Well, that's from the Krishna book, actually. There's a little extra there. The actual Srimad Bhagavatam says, Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow, very much distressed, with tears in her eyes. She appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. The Prabhupada mentions that little extra. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. So, you know, that sometimes a few tears go a long way. Sometimes they don't. Anyway. Thereafter, having heard the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma, with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods, approached the shore of the ocean of milk. Now, of course, in the purport we see here, it's very important that After Lord Brahma understood the precarious condition of the earth, he first visited the demigods headed by Indra, who are in charge of the various affairs of this universe, and Lord Shiva, who is responsible for annihilation. Both maintenance and annihilation go on perpetually under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.8. So we see that, Prabhupada expands upon this in verse 20, this same point. Verse 20, after reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master of the whole universe, the supreme God of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worship Lord Vishnu, who lies in the ocean of milk, by reciting the Vedic mantras known as the Purusha Shukta. So at this point here, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the demigods such as Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra and Surya are all subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Vishnu, however, is the God of gods, Parameshwar. He is Parama Purush, the Supreme Being, Paramatma, as confirmed in Brahma Samhita, that Govinda, the Supreme Controller, has an eternal blissful spiritual body. No one is equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he is described here by many words, Jagannath, Deva Deva, Vrikshikapi and Purush. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the statement of Arjuna. Vishnu is the plenary expansion of Lord Krishna, and all Vishnu tattvas are Parameshvara or Deva Deva. So we see here that this is actually proof that Vishnu, who then is supreme among all the demigods, that they had to take the help of Vishnu, and that Vishnu then wants them to take shelter of Krishna as the supreme, alternate Lord of all Lords, as the topmost power to maintain, protect, even the demigods. So that is proof in the Vedas that Vishnu, and who expands from Krishna, is the topmost above all demigods. Otherwise, Brahma would have fixed it, or Shiva would have fixed it, if they were supreme. But you cannot be supreme and go to someone higher. So, arriving on the shore of the ocean of milk, the milk ocean. In the Krishna book, chapter 1, Srila Prabhupada mentions this. He says, arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earthly planet by assuming the transcendental form of a boar. In the Vedic mantras, there is a particular type of prayer called Purushushukta. Generally, the demigods offer their obeisances unto Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by chanting the Purushushukta.
Does that come as the next verse?
It may do, yeah. I'm just trying to find.
Yeah.
In trance, where is it? Where do you find? You found it?
No.
No.
Because I know we're reading somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before.
There'll be a reference. Prabhupada usually, he's quoting a reference. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that, you know, he's quoting the reference. These things are all very important. I can give you an example why in a minute. So, we'll come back to that. So, we see here that in verse 21, while in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Kshiradakshai Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay. In the purport, it appears that the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be heard in trance by competent persons. Similarly, although other persons cannot hear the words of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma is able to hear the Lord's words within himself. While Brahma was in trance, he was able to hear the words of Kshiradakshai Vishnu and he carried the Lord's message to the demigods. So this is similar to what he did at the beginning of creation. And we remember that at the beginning of creation, as we studied in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he heard from Krishna. That has been established. Now, while Brahma was in trance, he was able to hear the words of Kshiradakshai Vishnu and he carried the Lord's message to the demigods. Similarly, in the beginning of Brahma first received the Vedic knowledge from the Supreme Person of God through the call of the heart. Now, although Lord Vishnu was invisible even to Lord Brahma could hear the Lord Vishnu's words through the heart. The Supreme Personality of God is invisible even to Lord Brahma, yet he descends on this earth and becomes visible to people in general. This is certainly an act of his causeless mercy. So what we take from here so far is that even for Brahma, so this is in the ordinary course of how things work in the universe, this is the ordinary course that even Lord Brahma, for him, it is, you know, not that easy to just see Vishnu. What to speak of others. Therefore, when Krishna, the origin of Vishnu, shows himself directly to all men when he appears on earth, it's a display of extraordinary mercy, not available at any other time. So, very like that. And as we've heard a few times in some of the purports so far, that, and as Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book on this section, that because Vishnu is lying on the ocean of milk, he is called Kshiradakshai Vishnu. That's the ocean of milk within the Svetadvipa, within that Vishnu planet within this universe. He is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through whom all the incarnations within this universe appear. That's in the Krishna book. That's why they approach him. Because when there's some trouble, they're going to need Vishnu, who even maintains the demigods, to come. And all the incarnations will come at the behest of Vishnu. Therefore, they approach him. All the avatars appear through him. Therefore, Krishna appears through him as well. That is the usual course of things.
Why did you say that was?
Because whenever there is problems created for any of the planetary rulers, individually or jointly, then they go to Brahma, just as Bhumi did, and then Brahma will go to Vishnu. When there are difficulties that, you know, the demigods and Brahma can't solve, and the avatar of Vishnu must appear, that's the only person who can solve that problem. And therefore all the avatars come through Vishnu, because he is the one they approach, you know, as the supreme maintainer within the universe. And therefore, even in this case, when Vishnu comes, they again approach Vishnu, and even Krishna comes through Vishnu.
Shiradakshay
Vishnu. Just as, you know, in a prison, you have the superintendent of the prison. Even if the prime minister, the president or the queen, wanted to visit the prison out of their mercy, they would make that arrangement through the superintendent. And the prisoners in there may be thinking, oh, superintendent is so powerful, you can either let the president in or tell him time's up, you've got to go. The superintendent of the prison is so powerful. He's controlling everything. It appears like that. But it is just the natural etiquette, the natural way things are done. So Lord Brahma informed the demigods, before we submitted our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, for as long as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burden by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus.
You know how they've said that they've all approached Vishnu because they see that Mother Earth is really burdened by all this evil, demoniac kind of people?
Yes, and the sinful reactions.
What sometimes I find it hard to understand or reconcile is, in those days, we still had a lot of pious people as well. Like, if we look at Bhishma Dev or the Pandavas, they were very pious people as well. Whereas right now, if you compare our earth right now, there's a lot more evil, there's very little religion. Why isn't Krishna being approached now? I think we need him more desperately than they needed him at that time.
Those very, very powerful kings, actually demons of all dress, they're not much has changed.
It's almost like every person now would be considered evil, at least to some extent. Then that means evil would be more prevalent now than it was in those days. And they seem to make it sound, when you look at the way they're pleading in front of him, that it's a dire situation. But then when you compare it to our situation, I think this is far more dire than what they were facing then.
So, before the appearance of Krishna, actually many of the brahmanas were unable to perform they performed their duties only in great fear, or some of them even put aside some of the sacred fire yagyas and different practices for fear of the demoniac rulers. Some of them, you know, some of them in fear of Kamsa were actually even hiding in caves. Some of them had spread themselves to, you know, different paths. So there was a lot of...
But see, right now, again, if you compare even that example, we don't even know how to do the yagyas correctly, like to the extent that these people could do it. They could look into the future, they could look into the past. We don't have those kinds of pure Brahmins now.
So at that particular time, military strength and the power of these demons, we don't see anything like that. If you get Adolf Hitler and Mussolini and, you know, Stalin, put them all together and give them all their big armies back again, they're like little insects compared to Jarasandha, you know, them and all that, you know, put them all together over the last 200 years, all those great persons and all their armies combined, they don't compare anything to the military strength and the power of these persons at that time. Even the demigods actually feared them. So they're very, very powerful. So that's number one. And therefore, you know, there was a lot of, sinful activity also on the earth felt burdened, you know, when pious activities diminish, sinful activities increase, and there was a lot of burden of sinful reactions. And then comparing this to now, Prabhupada says in verse 22, which is a purport, he says, at present also various demoniac states all over the world are increasing their military power in many ways, and the whole situation has become distressful. Therefore, Krishna has appeared by his name in the Hare Krishna movement, which will certainly diminish the burden of the world. And, you know, so there, Prabhupada describes that the transcendental sound, Hare Krishna, is non-different from the person Krishna. He quotes that verse, Nama Chantamani Krishna. There is no difference between the sound Hare Krishna and Krishna the person. Yeah. So... What's that? Yeah. So, therefore, Advaita Acharya, seeing the same situation in Kali Yuga, he called out, and he is an incarnation of Vishnu, Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya. So in the Panchatattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, he appeared. So when the Lord appears, first he gets his senior persons that he likes to associate with. They first appear, and then he appears along with some of his associates and then some others, Nitya Siddhas, also appear after that. So actually the same scenario did play out in Kali Yuga, and Advaita Acharya, who's Mahavishnu, he called for the Lord, you must appear now, and the Lord appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the same thing played out. And the Hare Krishna movement is again Krishna appearing. There is no difference between Krishna and his holy name. So it's the same pastime, except in the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he doesn't kill the demons, but he kills the demoniac propensity within the heart, because it's said in Satya Yuga, the demons would take birth on different planets. In Treta Yuga, they take birth, same planet, there's different countries, different nations. In Dwapara Yuga, same family as with the Pandavas.
Yes.
And in Kali Yuga, they appear within the same body.
Yes,
so he can't kill the demon, because you know you have to, you know, it's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You want to keep the baby.
We might say that the name, like, it can help the devotees, but I'm not sure if it's going to help, like, the bad people.
You have to wait and see. Oh yes.
Because they don't seem, they can just ignore us then and just go, and you can.
We're very hard to ignore. That's why in nearly everyone's house all over the world they have a Krishna book, Bhagavad Gita, and Deez, Prasadam. You can't ignore a tidal wave, is it? You see. So, as we read this Krishna book, it's from a Bhagavatam, and we understand that Krishna and his holy name are the same, when we have that understanding, and that the glories of, of Krishna, so just by hearing about Krishna, that is the same as Krishna being there, and that is the same as being elevated to the spiritual world, then we say, well, if Krishna is present, then everything will be done. So all we have to do is get to that understanding, 100% full faith. Krishna and his holy name, the person and his name, they are 100%. Krishna is now here in the form of his holy name as the incarnation of, in Kali Yuga, to rectify religious principles, to curb the demoniac propensities and allow the devotees to take pleasure in glorifying the Lord uninterruptedly all over the world. So we just as we go through, we develop that understanding, and then once that understanding is there, we can see very easily, yes, it will happen. And this is what Parikshit Maharaj said. How did Arjun, you know, survive, and the Pandavas survive the battle of Kurukshetra? You know, they were like, you know, little fish with these Timangila fish. You know, so we may feel the same thing. Timangila fish, they're like, you know, just like whales swallow up all these krill. Timangila, they swallow up whales. So, you know, that we feel like that, and Parikshit Maharaj is saying, let us hear about him. So when we understand, well, that same Krishna, you know, what are these little Kali Yugaites, very foolish, running around with their puny little bombs? They don't even have the, you know, what are they going to do? You know, fools, run around like animals. How are they going to defeat Krishna, who is able to, you know, do this? Yeah? So, therefore, now, bearing all of this in mind, I'm now going to... So, as we said, the Lord has asked his the demigods to appear within the families of the Yadus. Now, in the Garga Samhita, this is said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, this is Krishna, he's speaking to Brahma, and I'll tell you how this conversation came about. He said, O Shiva and other demigods, hear my words. By my order, you and your wives should appear by your amsa expansions.
You're telling to Brahma or...?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to...
This?
I'll tell you. Yeah, this is from the Garga Samhita. Yeah, you won't find it there. But in the Garga Samhita, there's a story how, as we said, we're hearing the usual scenario to understand the usual situation. Our Brahma, of course, heard from Krishna at the very beginning of creation. He was instructed by Krishna. We've already studied that in Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore he's about to appear. We hear in the Garga Samhita that, because from here we understand that, you know, when they heard this message from Vishnu, they all went home. But there is a more confidential pastime, which is more than the average reader requires, where actually Lord Brahma and the demigods actually went further and were able to, with Lord Vishnu, and they actually went through the universe along the Viraj River and came to where Krishna was there. So I'm going to go back to the beginning of that story and discuss this in a little bit more detail. Top secret meeting, yes.
Classified.
Lock that door. Bring down the cone of silence. No, I don't.
Classified.
We'll leave it there. I'm not going into that. I'm not going to tell you what the cone of silence is. Another life.
Oh, we know what it is.
Eh?
I've watched
Get Smart. Ah, you. There you go. All right. Okay. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so this is from Garga Samhita, O Shiva and other demigods, hear my words. By my order, you and your wives should appear by your amsa expansion so they can expand themselves.
Okay.
They can actually
so
be in
Brahma,
one place.
Shiva.
What's that? He's telling Brahma, Shiva, and the various, you know, a few demigods have got to go on this confidential excursion. In the family, appear in your amsa forms in the family of the Yadus on earth. I will also descend to remove the earth's burden as you would desire. I will also appear as a member of the Yadu dynasty. Now, Srila Prabhupada, when he's speaking in the Krishna book on this section, chapter 1, text 22, he also gives this similar information that we're going to hear from the Garga Samhita. And he says the message was this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear on the earth very soon, along with his supreme powerful potencies. And as long as he remained on the earth planet to execute his mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees, the demigod should also remain there to assist him. They should all immediately take birth in the family of the Yadu dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, himself would personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Before his appearance, all the demigods, along with their wives, should appear in different pious families in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. The exact word used here is tap, which means the demigod should appear on the earth in order to please the Lord. In other words, any living entity who lives only to satisfy the Lord is a demigod. And we can take that in two ways. That one, we should understand that the demigods are devotees of the Lord. But we should also understand that devotees are also will appear because they're also, their lives are meant to simply for the satisfaction of the Lord. Now, in verse 23, it says here, that this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. The Supreme Person of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him.
So does it go any further to tell us if like Shiva or Brahma came to earth and in what form?
There is some confidential information on that.
Okay.
Which I'm going to get to. In the Vaikuntha, so basically.
So the Garga Samhita explanation finished or is continuing?
What's that?
The Garga Samhita.
No, I'm going to go back
go
a little bit and backtrack to that story and so that we. You know, with everything that we've got in our mind now, you'll understand the story better.
Yeah.
And that, rather than tell the story. So I'm trying to, you know, in doing this, I want us to, you know, I'm telling the story so that we understand the Bhagavatam, not that we want to speak the Bhagavatam in order to understand other stories and that. You know, our primary goal is to understand the Bhagavatam. I'm telling the story to, you know, a little extra for that purpose. And but before I do that, I want to read this purport to text 23. Very important, because, you know, we're hearing this about Krishna Gita, how we can be liberated. And of course, what we want to know is, if I hear this, how can I go back to Godhead? How can I get into these pastimes of the Lord? Huh? So this is where we start to... The story from Garga Samhita shows how that happens, and this purport explains that. So we're going to read this purport first. And as you see, when I read the purport, I basically read the main parts I want you to hear. But so you sort of have to catch up where I'm reading it from. This is the purport to verse 23. And I will be starting from the first sentence. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita 4.9, the Lord says, Chakvati Hampana Janma Naiti Mamiti. After giving up the material body, the devotee of the Lord returns home, back to Godhead. This means that the devotee is first transferred to the particular universe where the Lord is at that time staying to exhibit his pastimes. So it may not even be this universe. You know, if we're ready to go into the Lord's pastimes, he might plop us into another whole universe. There are innumerable universes, and the Lord is appearing in one of these universes at every moment. Therefore, his pastimes are called Nitya Lila, eternal pastimes. Now, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, so it says, therefore the devotee is first transferred to that particular universe where the pastimes of the Lord are current. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, even if a devotee does not complete the course of devotional service, he enjoys the happiness of the heavenly planets, where the most pious people dwell, and then takes birth in the house of a Suchi or Sriman, a pious Brahmana or wealthy Vaishya. Thus a pure devotee, even if unable to execute devotional service completely, is transferred to the upper planetary systems where pious people reside. From there, if his devotional service is complete, such a devotee is transferred to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. So we're about to hear how different grades of the devotee, we've got the Nitya Siddhas coming from the spiritual world, we're also going to hear, you know, how persons who are sadhana siddhas, you know, they practice devotional service perfectly, and the Lord says, now, to finish everything off, I'll put you in the heavenly planets just to wait until the right time, my appearance, and then I'm going to take you from the heavenly planets and let you take birth within families that are involved in my activities like that.
And that's even people who are unable to execute devotional service completely.
Yes.
What does that mean, though?
Well, what it means is that to associate with the Lord, we have to be purified of any material attachment. Bhagavad Gita. I need a Bhagavad Gita. Where's our local keeper of the Gita? What's that?
You didn't bring your tiny little
one? No. I like that one. My bag was so full, but I know I can always trust Balaba. So I thought, I just had so much in my bag today. But we read this last time. Now your question is... Okay. Chapter 2, verse 72 in the purport. So, that is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, he can enter into the kingdom of God. And this is the process how he enters. Right? And what it says here, what are the qualifications? In the material world, there are activities of sense gratification, whereas in the spiritual world, there are activities of Krishna consciousness. Attainment of Krishna consciousness, even during this life, is immediate attainment of Brahman. And one who is situated in Krishna consciousness has certainly already entered into the kingdom of God. Once we are free from any activities for sense gratification, either, you know, trying to attain knowledge for the sake of it that has nothing to do with our service to Krishna, or, you know, looking after, you know, or performing pious activities or austerities that have nothing to do with the service of Krishna. Once we give up all forms of any activity which is not related to our service to Krishna, then we're eligible.
Yeah, but you know how it
no
says,
other desire. We only have desires to serve Krishna.
But you know how it says, even if a devotee does not complete the course of devotional service, he enjoys the happiness of heavenly planets.
Yes.
What does that mean? If a devotee does not complete the course of devotional service, what does that part mean, that one statement?
Yes, that means that they can go to the heavenly planets, and if they're not, if they need to complete their spiritual, qualifications, where they only have desire to serve Krishna, they can complete that in the heavenly planets, or they may take birth on the earth planet and complete it there.
Well, I was thinking, does it read like whether you've taken an interest in, say, Bhagavatam or Gita, and you've got into it, but you never finished the entire... something like that. Is that what it means?
Well, you see, some people, you know, they're performing, somehow they're in contact with devotional service, but they're not necessarily... fully dedicated to the spiritual path of going back home, back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
Like taking a guru.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's an awesome example.
Who's that?
Like taking a guru.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't, yeah. So, you know, if they're reading the Gita, at the end of the Gita, Krishna explains that those who study this Gita, they become pious, and they're eligible to go to the heavenly planets.
Okay.
A lot of people read Gita.
Yes.
But they do, you know, someone's birthday, new home, read the Gita, and they're not dedicated to going back to Godhead, but it is such an activity that they actually become eligible to go to the heavenly planets. But they're not, you know, then of those who go to the heavenly planets, and they may have some a little bit more, you know, they were doing it for the, you know, liberation.
Yes.
And liberation in the sense, not an impersonal one, but for going back to the spiritual world. If they don't hear Krishna Gita, and thus follow in the footsteps of the Braja Basis, they can't enter into Krishna's pastimes to go to Goloka Vrindavan. And then, even if they're interested in Krishna, but they don't follow in the footsteps of the Braja Basis, and even they like the idea of being a consort of Krishna, they can enter into Dwarka, but they can't enter into Goloka Vrindavan unless they follow in the footsteps of the Braja Basis. And to follow in the footsteps of Braja Basis, ultimately one has to have a spiritual body.
Okay.
And to attain that spiritual body, one has to associate with the Nityasiddha devotees and Krishna, and even if one's body is not completely purified, by the end of that pastime it will be.
Okay.
So yeah. There are many different considerations here.
Okay.
Right. So... what happens is that somehow a devotee, you know, either due to leaving their body when they're very serious about their spiritual life, but because they joined the Hare Krishna movement so late in life, they only had a few years, but it was very serious, but they still didn't have quite enough time to complete it. Or, you know, or that, you know, they got very serious at the end, but a lot of the time they weren't so serious and didn't quite complete it. not completing. When something is not complete, it means that... unable to execute service completely. Complete means purely. If we maintain... You know, if we're chanting Hare Krishna, you know, this is pointed out in the commentaries of Bhaktisiddhanta, if we're chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and maintaining offences, we're not performing sankirtan or complete chanting. It's incomplete chanting. We may be chanting 60 rounds, we may be chanting 64 rounds, but complete chanting means actually offenseless chanting. That's sankirtan. So the chanting must be complete and it is done. So there are many different reasons why... So Prabhupada's not going into all those reasons now. But as you can see...
basically
what... Well, it is one of them. As you can see, there are a variety of different reasons why something is not complete. But what we should understand... That's why I quoted this verse from the Gita, that the main thing we need to know is that complete means... We only have desire to serve Krishna and we don't have desire for sense gratification. And what is mentioned in these verses, of those last verses of the Bhagavad Gita, that even we're not 100% purified, in other words, we're not completely purified, Prabhupada mentions it here, this is chapter 2, text, the last couple of verses, 70, 71, 72. Now, Prabhupada makes his wonderful statement here. He says... yes. Because, you know, at the beginning of that verse 72, Prabhupada says, one can attain Krishna consciousness or divine life at once within a second, or one may not attain it, such a state of life, even after millions of births. So it's not so much the matter of time, but within the time allotted, did we come to the point where our only desires are to serve Krishna and not for sense gratification, right? That's the point. And if we have that, it can be fulfilled in a second. Very important point. Now, then, in... Where are we? Trying to find this. Now, in verse 70, it says this. So it's describing the Krishna conscious person who is full in themselves. And that despite the, you know, they're not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires. Because they're full in their Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada mentions, as long as one has a material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna-conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Right. So therefore, you see that we have the material body. There's some, you know, one may not be 100% pure, but there's no inclination, even desires come because we have the material body, we're in the material world. There's no inclination at all. There's only desires to serve Krishna. That person is Krishna conscious, and that person is eligible to be elevated to the heavenly planets and then enter into the pastimes of the Lord where the full purification can take place. But if a person still has inclinations to satisfy those material desires, their Krishna consciousness is not complete, and therefore they may, you know, if those desires are there to a significant degree, as Prabhupada once said, many of my disciples want to go to the heavenly planets. If it's there to a significant degree, one may enjoy the heavenly planets and then come back down to earth and, you know, begin the devotion.
So that's what is mentioned here, right? Impure devotee who put in fulfill may go to the upper planet. It means he'll come back, then complete, and then go.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, even, you know, because what we will see is that in this discussion with Gauga Muni is that even the sadhana siddhas who took birth and associated with the nitya siddhas, because there was still some little purification, impurity, from being in the material world. Now that impurity does not mean that, you know, they've got desires for sense gratification, but, you know, there's no inclination, but there's traces of impurity. And when Krishna called the gopis on the first rasa dance, some of them on that platform, the separation from Krishna burned up the last traces of impurity. So there's impurities on that level. You know, on that level where they're associating with Krishna in his pastimes and with the nitya siddhas, in Vrindavan, it is still considered there's some impurities there.
Who's this?
I'm going to read it in these, yeah. When the gopis, some of the nitya siddhas appeared as gopis, and some sadhana siddhas. They've gone to the heavenly planets and they've been called. They're the wives or the daughters of demigods. You come down. You're sadhana siddhas from previous lifetimes. But there's little impurity.
It's not
so much a desire. It's such a trace that it doesn't really so much manifest even as a desire, you know. But there's some, it's not 100% gone. There's some trace of material, association, the material association.
Well, you know how you've been using the two words, nitya-siddhas and...
So it's like, for instance, you know, have you ever seen a person, people who give up smoking?
Yes.
Right? And they've given up, but what they do is they walk around with a cigarette in the ear and sometimes one in the mouth. Sometimes they hold it in the hand. They never light it.
Okay.
They don't want it. They hate the things.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
You seen?
But they do that so that it satisfies the fact.
There's something there, but they never smoke it. They don't want it, they hate them. There's something there. But they're not smoking. They're not actually, you know, doing anything. They hate the thing. They don't want it. No inclination.
Okay.
I have no desire to smoke.
Maybe
they've given
people
up.
They're hanging out with, you know,
look, there's a trace there, and just to, you know, that last thing, we'll drop the thing. No! So it's like that, you know.
No.
But they're not actually, they don't have a desire. They've got
no
intention.
The name of the two words.
What's that?
The two words
that
Nitya Siddha.
And the other Siddhas. Yeah, Nitya
Siddhas. What's that?
They come with Krishna from the spiritual world.
Okay, so those are the closest associates.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was the other one?
Well, they're all elevated at the same level. The sadhana siddhas, they become as close as the nitya siddhas.
Okay,
yeah?
So what's the difference
then? The sadhana siddhas, they're from the material world. But their devotional service has become perfect. Sadhana, by practice, sadhana. Of devotion, sadhana bhakti, practice of bhakti, the siddha, they become perfect practitioner of bhakti.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just a method of getting there.
Yes, and they've been, their devotional service, that even though there's a trace of impurity, Krishna allows them, you know, they take birth in the heavenly planets. So in one sense, Krishna is allowing that last little trace to be satisfied, although they're such great sages, they really have no attraction for it, but at the same time,
it's an impression,
yes, it's like holding the cigarette, they're not smoking it. And then by taking birth in the families, and associating with the Nitya Siddhas and Krishna, and by the arrangement Krishna does in his pastimes, it burns up that last little trace, and then they go back to the spiritual world at the end of that life.
Somebody who's gone all the way to Goloka, is there any possibility of those people falling out at some point again?
No.
No, right? Because it's really hard work to get there. You don't want to fall back out.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so, and therefore, you know, Krishna doesn't just send you back.
Okay.
You know,
it's
trial by fire. No, when you get back, you know, you have that sense that, you know, it took a lot to get back here. Yeah.
So you remember everything then?
There's enough, you know, between, you know, Krishna will remind you, you know, if need be. But he promises that, you know, once he puts you through the ordeal of getting back there and the ordeal of being here, you don't come back. That's his promise.
Okay, good.
That's his process.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're starting on the set of questions.
Yeah. Another set.
In Bhagavad Gita, like we said, I can't go to chapel. Like they said, people who go to the heavenly planets, people who decide to go to Brahma, so they say that people who go to heavenly planets are people who desire, they are doing pious activities for material benefit. They want to enjoy the material benefits. And that's why they say that what's the destination of different people they keep talking about extensively, so that we have a proper destination and goal. So now, if there are people who are wanting to go to heavenly planets or doing the karma khanda who want material benefits, there are the people who say that they are going to go to heavenly planets. From him saying that.
Yeah, they want to go there.
They want to go there. They aspire to go there. But now we are saying here, that even devotees who are aspiring to serve Krishna, maybe they still have material desires there. Contaminations are not yet gone, but even they can land up in heavenly planets.
Well, they don't just sort of land there. Not an easy place to land.
It seems to be that if we're not differentiating between people who are.
Well, they let me off at the wrong station, sort of thing.
Well, that's the bit getting to next, isn't it? How they enter.
Yeah.
I mean, here, so then what's the difference between people who are doing pious activities and who really want to enjoy, they are doing those activities just to enjoy higher pleasures. Because in Bhagavad Gita they extensively talk about that.
Yeah,
and
so
people who are devotees.
Are these all the questions? No.
the whole thing I was asking. I said, like in Bhagavad Gita, there's so much of discussion that people, they're saying going to Bhagavad, these are people who are going to have nirvana, so that you're, the thing is that. So here, devotees who are also, I mean, say you said chanting their rounds. Maybe they still have maybe this, but maybe in their chanting itself. Maybe they say that, no, we want to serve Krishna, but still they have material desires, which contaminations are there, which have to be removed. But even they are going there.
So, for you, would you like to accidentally end up in the heavenly planets?
Land up.
Would you?
It's a danger. The danger is
You would think it would be a danger.
My scare is like we keep, they keep saying that.
No, I understand that, but I just want.
Earth is the most favorable place.
I understand all of that.
I'd be scared.
Yes.
If I have mental disease,
get it out.
And I go there, then I may be further distracted.
Exactly. That's my question. Now, let me just answer that, okay? Do you think that Krishna, in your heart, knowing that you're fearful to go there, would just dump you there? After all the nice chanting you're doing and you're making these nice guys, that he will not even consider what's in your heart and just, oh, look, I got one extra. I didn't know what to do with it. I just dump it here, you know, in Swagaloka and, you know.
But according to what our discussion was, I'm not purified.
Anyway,
I'm not purified, yes. My devotion is also...
Anyone who's fearful to go to the heavenly planets is purified enough not to end up dumped there. Right? That you may not be purified, but you're purified enough not to end up there. Okay? Because
Bhagavad Gita says this scenario for one who hasn't made sufficient advancement.
Yeah.
Isn't it? At a beginner in devotional service.
Yeah. You know, anyone who desires to go there is not sufficiently advanced. They're not sufficiently purified.
Can I ask one question? I didn't have this before, but you may have thought it now, because I thought going to the heavenly planets is better than being here. It's like taking the scenic route to go to Goloka, like I'm going to check out everything on my way.
Nirmala, you explain this to her. What is the danger that why you would not want to go to the heavenly planets?
See, in heavenly planets, the things are so favorable for enjoyment. There's no disease, there's no old age.
Oh wow, sounds good.
There are more lenience than you can have here. You can have a lot of sex without any consequences.
She's very worried about this.
They don't sound like very nice people.
They have the facility that they won't have. The thing is, they are supposed to, so they are done pious activities. But the thing is, when they go there, seeing all this enjoyment, they can get distracted.
There's a chance of coming back here.
Yeah.
So there's a strong chance of getting distracted with all the pleasures and everything, enjoyment that you can think of. In fact, the ladies there are 1,000 times more beautiful than the ladies here.
Yeah.
So there's a real distraction there.
Okay.
So that you may totally... So you have done pious activities here, you are thinking about Krishna here, and you go there, seeing all this, you totally forget everything and just enjoy.
Okay.
That's the biggest danger.
Would you just comment on the previous paragraph? There is about the Nityalila explanation of Nityalila is there.
Yep.
I just commented that in Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Mathilila, Mahaprabhu gives a very nice explanation. You know, it's kind of a gist of it in this purport.
In that previous...
In the verse 23, first paragraph, there is an explanation of how the pastimes are going on continuously in different universes.
Yes, yes.
So just come up with
it. Yeah. So, as you can see, that when one is purified, the thought of going to the heavenly planets is, a terrible prospect if it is detrimental to one's, that the allurements of the material world become detrimental to one's Krishna consciousness. However, if a devotee considered that for some particular reason that it may be beneficial, then they would accept. So a devotee is not attracted or averse to any situation in the material world, not heaven or hell. Wherever it is conducive for devotional service, the devotee will accept that. And anything which is not conducive to devotional service, whether it be heaven or hell, the devotee will reject that outright. So, and the Lord, within the heart, he can understand the devotee's consciousness, and therefore, knowing that the devotee wants to be placed in a situation which is only favourable to the devotional service, he will not put such a devotional service, such a devotee, in the heavenly planets, unless it was conducive to their devotional progress. That's the point. So,
there is a story in Brihad Bhagavatamrita where our gopi goes all through the spiritual world and becomes Indra, and then he's not satisfied in all those places, and then finally reaches Goloka Vrindavan.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Gopakumar, right. So he goes through heavenly planets and all that.
So if the devotee desires that he wants to enjoy, for example, somebody's very attracted to the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes.
And but they already happened on our planet and in this universe, which means.
Mm.
So is it possible that because of a strong desire for devotee, that devotee can then take birth in another universe
where
the passing of Chaitanya
Mahaprabhu was still... Yes, yeah, Prabhupada mentions that in the Krishna book, where he's summarising these few verses. And he says... where was that? Or is it in this purport?
In this purport
itself, text 23. This means that the devotee is first transferred to the particular universe where the Lord is at that time staying to exhibit his pastimes. So one, when one is ready to be transferred into the pastimes of the Lord, this universe, that wherever they're going on. So one doesn't have to hang around, and that's also an answer to Nirmala's question here, that the Lord, he's not going to just, put you in the heavenly planet saying, well, my pastimes aren't going to be for another 4 billion, 300 million years. Just hang around up there on Satyaloka, you'll get used to it, and I'll come back and pick you up on my next trip around. No. He'll just put you immediately into another universe and not waste a second. So, it proves the point. He's not just going to put people in the, in storing place, we'll drop you there, you'll be happy.
I heard in a lecture that when you take birth, a living entity takes birth in one universe, then you're pretty much stuck in that universe and you just have to go back to God from just that very universe. But apparently that's not the case. You can actually get transferred to other universes.
Ordinarily. Because ordinarily for liberation, one does not have to, enter into the pastimes of the Lord ordinarily. A person can be qualified to go back to Vaikuntha through their sadhana bhakti, without necessarily entering into the pastimes of that particular Lord. But for Krishna, even if one is a Krishna devotee, if one wants to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, and that portion where Krishna, is with the Brajavasis, one must follow in the footsteps of the Brajavasis. And to do that, eventually one has to execute devotional service in the spiritual body in their association. And if there is some impurity, that little impurity will be purified in the association of those Nitya Siddhas and allow you to fully follow internally and externally in the spiritual body, and then you are eligible. So that, therefore, it's a little different to ordinary considerations of liberation, where one generally just needs to be within that particular universe. In this case, specifically, one has to, for this Brajabasi association with Krishna, and therefore we see that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Vyankarabhata, why is Lakshmi performing, austerities to have association with Krishna? Is this unchaste because she's already married to Narayan at that? And of course, Vyankarabhata, he understood, that Narayan is the husband of Lakshmi and Krishna is that same person, and Lakshmi wants to associate with her husband in all his different features, therefore it's not unchaste. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him another question. So why is it she couldn't attain that? And he said, that I cannot answer. And Lord Chaitanya said, because even if one is Lakshmi, the consort of the Lord, unless she follows in the footsteps of the Braja, even she cannot enter into those pastimes. And she's already liberated. So, you see, one must, enter into a universe, and therefore Krishna will not just, make one way. Krishna will immediately place one in that situation. Therefore, devotees of Krishna in the Brajabasi mood, they don't accept any of the different, they're not interested in any of the different forms of liberation, attaining the same form as the Lord, the same plan as the Lord, the same opulence as the Lord. They want to attain the love of God as exhibited by the Brajabasis. And to do that, they must follow in their footsteps, in their association, in the spiritual body, eventually.
The Gop Kumar was never transferred to the planet where Krishna is having his pastime. He just went through progressive, higher and higher planets.
Well, if the opportunity is available in this universe, one can take that. If it's not, then Krishna will, make the opportunity in another universe. Plenty of time.
And he was already a Brajabasi.
What's that?
He was already a Brajabasi.
There you go.
Go.
Just
being
transferred to Vrindavan several times before he could make further progress.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get to the Chaitanya Bhagavat. What is it? Brihad Bhagavatamrita.
Oh, that point is interesting.
Which one?
That,
I thought they're all interesting.
I'm
losing my touch. Yeah, go on.
He was told, the higher and higher he went, he was asked, if you want to do this, go back to the heavenly, go back to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So then now we are saying that from heavenly planets people can get in the pastime of the Lord. But Gop Kumar, he had to come back to earth, do this as his sadhana to go higher. Every time he went higher, then they said, oh, you want to associate with the Lord? Okay, go back to the earth.
Mm.
And he had to come back to the earth. And then here we are saying that...
Where did he go on the earth?
I don't think so.
Not every time.
Not every time.
Not every time.
At least
only the first time. That's all.
It's just I think it was
from when he was associated, when he was in fact actually Brahma. From there he comes back to the earth.
No.
He was. He had to. He came back to
the earth.
To go back again.
No.
And here they're saying.
No.
Please tell me that's not true.
Not there are times he comes back, not every time.
But as one he says Brahma, doesn't he come back?
Can't remember perfectly, but
he takes a position of Brahma.
Yeah.
At that time then he comes back.
There's no problem with coming back to the earth.
No, they said that you have to do this and actually in fact there's another Brahmana who hears one of the devotees is actually crying, there's another Brahmana who goes and hears a devotee crying in Vrindavan forest. Then he goes into his wife. Then he tells his story. And then he says that he's on earth at that time. And he says that. That was my impression, that even from higher you go, you come back.
Mm. There were, I think, two key...
The point is that there's no contradiction that what to speak of going... Actually... You know, you're losing the point. The point is that wherever it is conducive for a devotee to make progress on the path of Braja Bhakti, they will go there. They're not fit, whether it be heaven, earth, or the hellish planets. It makes no difference. And therefore, you know, if one goes to the heavenly planets, the Lord thinks that is the most conducive place because of the circumstances, then the devotee will accept that. Otherwise, they're not interested. If earth, actually once Vyasadeva was asked, in Kali Yuga, was it, which is the most best place to take birth in Kali Yuga? Because, you know, Kali Yuga gives such... He said, on earth. Which is the best Yuga? Which is the best Yuga? He said the best yuga is Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga, you know, the circumstances are so conducive to spiritual life. See? So actually to take birth on earth in Kali Yuga, Vyasadeva said that is the best. And in Kali Yuga, you just have to chant Hare Krishna. So you're missing the point there. It's not a matter of going to heaven or this. The point is that wherever it is conducive for the next step of one's devotee's devotional service, that place the Lord will put them there. And a devotee has no aversion to that place because understand the Lord will put me there because my main objective is devotional service. Okay, so let's move on. So now, just before I move on to this, there's in the Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, chapter 2, text 12, there's this verse which indicates also that, because we've discussed, you know, this supreme mercy, you know, that even Brahma, they generally don't get to see Vishnu. You know, it's what to speak of other demigods. Therefore, when Krishna appears, who's the source of Vishnu, how merciful that is, he appears on earth. Right? So this verse here describes a little bit about that. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.12. The Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency, Yoga Maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulence, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus his, Sri Krishna's transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. So in the purport, Prabhupada describes, when Lord Krishna... What's that? 3.2.12. Bhagavatam. When Lord Krishna was within this universe, he seemed to be a human being because he appeared in a manner just suitable for his pastimes in the mortal world. He did not appear in human society in his Vaikuntha feature with four hands because that would not have been suitable for his pastimes. But in spite of his appearing as a human being, no one was or is equal to him in any respect in any of the six opulences. When the Lord's pastimes are visible to the human eye, they are called prakata, and when they are not visible, they are called aprakata. But basically, they never stop. It's just sometimes they're visible in one universe. It should not be misunderstood that his transcendental body, which is just suitable for the pastimes in the mortal world, is in any way inferior to his different expansions in the Vaikuntha lokas. His body manifested in the material world is transcendental par excellence in the sense that his pastimes in the mortal world excel his mercy displayed in the Vaikuntha lokas. In the Vaikuntha lokas, the Lord is merciful toward the liberated or Nitya Mukta living entities. But in his pastimes in the mortal world, he is even merciful even to the fallen souls who are Nitya Bada or conditioned forever. The six excellent opulences which he displayed in the mortal world by the agency of his internal potency, Yoga Maya, are rare even in the Vaikuntha lokas. All his pastimes were manifested not by the material energy, but by his spiritual energy. The excellence of his Rasa Leela at Vrindavan and his household of life with 16,000 wives is wonderful even for Lord Narayan, for Narayan in Vaikuntha, and is certainly so for all other living entities within this mortal world. His pastimes are wonderful even for other incarnations of the Lord, such as Sri Ram, Nrisimha, and Varaha. His opulence was so super excellent that his pastimes were adored even by the Lord of Vaikuntha, who is not different from the Lord Krishna himself. And of course, even as we heard, even Lakshmi, you know, the consort of Narayan, she was also attracted to those pastimes. So, just a little bit about the, say, the rare and, you know, unparalleled nature of Krishna appearing and giving so much mercy, not just to liberated persons, but here we are reading about his pastimes, and by reading about his pastimes, we can also be elevated to that platform of gradually sadhana siddha and nitya siddha. Let's go back to our other point. So,
Garg Samhita.
Was that? Yes. Yes, we're getting there.
Yes, yes.
It's so hard to get. I just got to turn that page, but it's just like
you're keeping the suspense alive.
So, now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in commenting on the text 23 of that first chapter of the 10th canto, he discusses this Suryastriya, the wives of the demigods. It refers to expansions of Krishna's eternal female companions who were present even who were present in the heavenly planets. So as I said before, in the heavenly planets, not only were the sadhana siddhas there waiting as demigods, but the nitya siddhas were also there. And in some cases, as we were here, the nitya siddhas and the demigods appeared in the same body, so that materialistic people could just see the material affairs of the universe going on, and others can see that the appearance of these personalities from the spiritual world is being covered by the Lord's Yoga Maya, so they can't see. Therefore, you see in topics like the Satyanarayana, you know, Katha, which people do, which is a little bit materialistic, really, but at the end of that, it describes that certain personalities appeared, these, you know, by performing the Satyanarayana puja, they appeared as these very elevated persons. Some of them we know as nitya siddhas. So as you can see that throughout the different Puranas, the Nichasiddhas, such as Vasudeva and Devaki and Yashoda and Nanda and others, they can appear along with demigods in the same body, and when the Nichasiddhas go back to the spiritual world, the demigods can go back to the heavenly planets. And there are a lot of there's a lot of factors to it, and that's why we need to hear from Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, so we can. There's a lot of pitfalls for the unwary beginner. If they hear, even though they read the scriptures, they still won't have a clue what's going on. It's so confidential. And so he's also explaining examples, right? Examples of these eternal female companions of Krishna are the wives of the Manvantara avatars and of Lord Vamana. They're examples. Shura, which means demigod, Sura Striya, wives, the wives of the demigods. They perform worship to attain friendship and intimacy with Krishna's most dear lovers, Prajagopis. They wanted that. They wanted to associate with Krishna's gopis, and so they got that opportunity. Because of this worship, they took birth in the Yadu dynasties as different Priya Shaktis of Krishna in Bombay Vrindavan to enrich the Lord's transcendental pastimes. And Prabhupada also, in his Prabhupada in the Krishna in the purport, one purport he mentions that also among the Surastriya, the women of the heavenly planets, there are many devotees such as the mother of Upendra, the mother of the Upendric incarnation of Krishna. And as we know that Krishna himself appeared first as the child of Sutapa and Prishni, and Krishna appeared as Prishni Garbha. So they were like demigods. And then he appeared as the child Vamana for Aditi and Kashyapa. And then he appeared as Vasudeva and Devaki. Now he says that, I appeared to you too, to the Vasudeva and Devaki, that you were Sutapa and Prishni, and then Aditi and Kashyapa, and now Vasudeva and Devaki.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what is the pastime of Prishni and Sutapa having Krishna as their son?
Yeah, that is the first time that Krishna appeared to Devaki and Vasudeva. I'm not going to go into all that because it is mentioned in chapter 2. So when we come to it, we're going to get to that. I'll go into all detail. I just want to mention that Prabhupada and is mentioning in his purports that basically both Sadhana Siddhas and Nitya Siddhas are appearing in the heavenly planets as different personalities, who then they're the ones being called upon to appear within the Yadu in the Krishna dynasty, like that.
So those are going to the Nityasiddhas, I understood, the consorts of the Lord's incarnations in the heavenly planets. And here who mentioned those who go to the heavenly planet, they were not Sadhana Siddhas in the purport. They were those who couldn't really complete.
There are some that go there
as well.
Yeah, who they, just by reading the Gita, if you study the Gita, it is so pious that you know, the point is, it is such a pious activity, you can then end up in the heavenly planets.
Yeah, that is the devotees who do not complete.
Yeah, they're not completed the devotional service.
But they are considered as not a very advanced devotee who has to take birth in a family of a devotee or rich.
Yes,
but
so from they,
lower level.
Yes.
End of sixth chapter. So they go to the heavenly planets.
They go, and then after many, many years in the planets of the demigods, they will also take birth in a family conducive to actually complete their understanding and of the Bhagavad Gita, etc. So they will, you know, after many, then they take birth in a more conducive family for spiritual life, which is here on earth.
Yes.
But others, when they go to the heavenly planets, it's just for the purpose of being transferred into Krishna's pastimes. In this universe or another universe where it's appropriate.
So they are also sadhana siddhas?
They are sadhana siddhas. The other ones are not sadhana siddhas. Yes. They're sadhanas, but not sadhana siddhas.
But you can go from the heavenly planets to Krishna as well. You don't have to come back to earth.
No, that's right. And that is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that I've read that, and the Gita also, that you can... you know, if you go to the heavenly planets, it is possible to perfect your devotional service there and go back to Godhead. Yeah. But that would mean... what's that?
Isn't that what that verse also means?
Yes, but...
Even if unable to execute devotional service completely, is transferred to the upper planetary systems where pious people reside. From there, his devotional service is complete, such a devotee is transferred to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on.
Yeah, but what she's saying is that if the devotional service is not complete and they're not transferred to where the Lord's pastimes are going on and they're not fit for that transfer, then can they just make further advancement on the heavenly planets? And the answer is yes. But when they are complete, at some stage they will have to be transferred to where Krishna pastimes are going on.
We said that further down too about the heavenly planets.
Prabhu, when you have a Nitya Siddha and a Sadhana Siddha who come together, say as Mother Devaki or Yashoda, so the Sadhana Siddha, they become purified by such intimate association, because it seems...
Let's go to that section. That is a section we're going to study in the second chapter. It's a big topic, so we'll get there. It's not just something I can answer in 2 minutes. As Prabhupada would say, you can't... ask Prabhupada, sometimes they'd ask even a simple question, you'll not understand this in 2 minutes. So... okay.
There's a lot to talk about on that purport.
There certainly was. yes, actually, so now I'll just, to this purport, I'll probably quote again. When we talk about Devaki and, you know, the Nitya Siddhas along with the, you know, demigods in the one body, this is a purport that explains it. It takes a lot of meditation, but it's from Vishwanath Chakravarti the Core, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 55, text 1. It explains this combination. It says, it is seen that when the eternal associates of the Supreme Lord, Swayam Bhagavan, appear in this world by the Lord's own desire, they assume the reputations of the opulent potencies, vibhutis, Krishna contains within himself rather than appearing according to their own reputations. So, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, in the 10th chapter, he talks about his vibhutis, special material opulences, which are and powers, extraordinary powers, and he says, among, you know, methods of procreation, I am Kandapa, the god of love.
Taste in the water.
Yeah, the taste of the water, but we're talking about demigods. among what's commanders, I am Kartikeya, like that. So they represent different vibhutis, right? So they assume the reputations of the opulent potencies, vibhutis, Krishna contains within himself, rather than appearing according to their own reputations. So we see that Vasudeva and Devaki, they appear, and Krishna is going to appear as their son, but we don't know that they're Vasudeva and Devaki. Oh, they're glorious. Why not tell us? Rather, they're Shatapa in prison, a deity in Kashyapa. This is done so that the materialistic men do not raise doubts, and in order to protect the confidential nature of bhakti. So unless one is Krishna doesn't like people to poke their nose in where it's not wanted. Because they'll only cause offence to his devotees and the Lord himself and the whole process of bhakti that the Lord recommends.
So we can also say that Krishna put us in the Melbourne temple because that's most suitable for our devotional service.
I thought you were going to say something else. I thought you were going a whole different direction. No, that's good. Yeah, there you go. You saved her at the last minute. All right. Let's not go there. This is stated by Krishna himself to Uddhava in the 11th canto. The Vedic seers and mantras deal in esoteric terms, and I am also pleased by such confidential descriptions. So, in the 11th canto, Uddhava says this, that the Vedic seers, those who actually know the Vedas properly, they deal in very esoteric terms because certain things are kept confidential. And Krishna likes that. If something's confidential... So, you know, very simply put, you know, if you meet someone, you know, say there's the husband and the wife or even your best friend or something or your child, you know, you meet someone, you don't know them very well, you know, best you may give your names. You know, or sometimes not. You know, you might just say, this is my wife. That's it. You don't even tell them the name. You know. Quite often in Vedic culture, they just say, Devi. It's Devi. They don't speak the name in public. And, you know, they really, you know, because you don't want them, you know, prying into, you know, very personal affairs. That's natural, like that. So the Vedas are like that. You really have to get to know a person, know that they're not going to, you know, that they're the right type of person that you can trust with confidential knowledge. Because the people who cause you the most trouble in life are the people who can get the closest to you. So, in this way, the Vasu named Drona, Krishna's Vibhuti, was merged into Nanda, and Drona's wife Dara merged into Yashoda. The demigod named Vasu became Uddhava, Indra became Arjun, Yamaraj became Vidura, and Kartikeya became Samba. Even the Supreme Lord himself appears through the celebrity of his plenary portions, Amsa, which actually merge with him when he appears. For example, sometimes the Lord of Vaikuntha comes and takes birth in the home of Vasudeva, Krishna's father, And sometimes it is Lord Vamana, or sometimes Sri Narayana Rishi or Kshiradakshai Vishnu. So even Krishna said, I appeared to you, Vasudeva and Devaki. Oh, we didn't know that Krishna appeared. We know that Vamana appeared. Oh, that was me. So even Krishna is keeping his own appearance confidential. And as we explain...
So Shiva didn't take a form?
Yes. I'm going to get to the Garga Samhita. I've got a little bit more of that. We may have to...
I just heard you say Kartikeya took the form of Sambha.
Yes.
Sambha was pretty bad, wasn't he? He was the son who caused the entire destruction of the...
Well, that was Krishna's will. Yeah.
But he was pretty bad.
Well,
he never got
it could have been
Kartikeya
playing up, you know. No, we'll get there. But no, Sambha was good. But that's the thing. But sometimes, so of course, Sambha is an eternal resident of the spiritual world. See? So if we misunderstand the pastime, we think Sambha is bad, then we, you know...
He was always in contention with Krishna, and he was always a troublemaker. He hated his father.
Well, yeah, see, there's probably misunderstanding there. So that's why, you know, it's better to think of him as Kartikeya. And then there's no offence to Krishna. Yeah. But we'll get to that. So, in this way, Prajumna, who is the third member of Krishna's eternal fourfold plenary expansion, the Chatavyuha, appeared according to the reputation of the mundane Cupid Kamadev, who is contained within himself, Prajumna, and is an expansion of his own opulence as stated in this verse. So literally, the demigod Kamadev is an opulence of Prajumna, who's the, you know, one of the Chatavyuha, or the personality of Godhead. And that is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 10.28 of progenitors, I am Kandapa, Cupid. Kamadev attained another body by entering into the body of Prajumna. So we know that he was cursed. Kadama. Therefore, he is called...
Is this
Kadama? Was it Ananga? Bodiless. It's here in the Gayatri Mantra. At the end of the Gayatri Mantra... And sometimes Cupid is referred to as bodiless because he was cursed to lose his body. So that is there in that last Gayatri Mantra, Ananga. I think that. But then he got it. He then, because he's actually one of the opulences of Prajumna, of Vibhutis, and he, in Krishna's pastimes, he entered into the pastimes of into Prajumna. This he attained not by his own powers, but by the will of the Lord, the ocean of variegated pastimes. Yeah? So there we see that there's a reason for all of this, that things are kept very confidential, and sometimes things are very confusing. Oh, this person appears to be a demigod, and Krishna's saying he appeared three times, but he didn't, and, you know, that wasn't Vasudeva and Devaki, that was a deity, and Kashyapa, you know, some of the things. Is that a question? All right. How are we going with time?
Almost there.
4:50? 10 minutes? All right. I'm going to read three chapters of the Garga Samhita. No.
So, this Garga Samhita, where can you find it? The extracts? Because I read the Krishna book and I read the... But whatever you've covered today wasn't in either the Canto 10 or in the Krishna book.
Yeah, no, I read a lot from the Canto 10 and the Krishna book.
Oh, no, no.
But there's a lot, there's more, yes.
So where can I get that?
Well, even some of the quotes I mentioned were quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
I haven't really read much from the Garga Samhita at all.
Okay.
I haven't quite got there. But you can get it in the bookshop. But I am going to read it. But no, actually... most of this that we discussed today was literally from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I only touched I've mentioned the story, but never quite got there. But I read maybe a verse or two from it. Yeah.
Okay.
But
he's a prolific reader, and he takes notes from other sources.
Yeah.
And compiles it all together.
Yeah.
But at the start, he was saying it's better to concentrate just on Krishna book.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really, actually, most of what we've discussed here, that's right, is literally from the Bhagavatam. We haven't really gone very much. I've got that. I'm going to get to it. But but the thing is here that some of the topics that we've mentioned here, I've had to quote further on from chapter 55, you know, and from the pastimes of the gopis and different purports from there to bring it back to here. So from the Gita. Mostly what we've got here today is actually coming from the Bhagavatam itself, and from Prabhupada's purports and a little bit from the Krishna book here. And even the quotes from Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the core, they've been far less than literally the purports. So, what I shall do I'll read next week for the sake of suspense the Gargamita section.
Okay.
Right, which will help us to refresh.
So you're not gonna tell us which bird Shiva took.
No, you have to wait.
Come back next week.
You have to, yeah. So what I will do in our 6.5 minutes is just one or two extra things that are connected with where we are here. And next week we'll continue. We'll fill in quite a very beautiful story from the Garga Samhita of how Brahma met Krishna after going through the whole universe like that. We'll read that and then we'll come back to the rest of this story. But I'll just read a few verses here. Here's, you know, as we said, I'll read you something from the Garga Samhita. A couple of little things that are suitable for this part. Now, this is from Garga Samhita. When her husband, Lord Krishna, the master of the universes, finished speaking, I'll tell you what he said next week. And basically what that is in summary is he's asked all the particular demigods, including Shiva, please, you'll take birth as this one. You'll take, you know, so many different things.
Yes.
And then what did Radha say about all of that? I'll read you that. Yeah.
Radharani.
Yeah, what did she? What did she think about that? Oh, you know, Krishna, you're going, you know. When her husband, Lord Krishna, the master of the universe, finished speaking, Sri Radha, who was overcome with fear of being separated from him, appearing like a flowering vine burning in a great forest fire, weeping, trembling, about to faint, and her bodily hair standing on end, spoke as follows. Go to earth and remove its burden. Hear my great vow, O Lord of my life. When you are gone, I will not maintain my life. If you do not believe my words, I will say them once more. If you go, then my life, which is yearning to depart, will become like camphor dust. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, I will take you with me. O Radha, do not lament. I will remove the earth's burden and ensure your words do not prove false. Sri Radha said, my heart cannot be happy where there is no Vrindavan forest, no Jamuna river and no Govardhan hill. Upon hearing this, Lord Krishna sent Govardhan hill, the Jamuna river and a 47 crosha portion of his earth to this abode. After bowing down along with the other demigods, Lord Brahma asked Lord Krishna, where on the earth should I appear? Okay, so he hasn't told Brahma yet. Where will you appear? Where should the other demigods be born? What will be our names? Oh, so there's a little section. There's a little section here, but there's more further. But this is so. This will satisfy that. Krishna says, "I will appear as the son of Devaki and Vasudev. My transcendental kala expansion, Sesha, will appear as the son of Rohini." And as we said, although Krishna is saying, my kala expansion sesha, it's not wrong to call Balaram sesha. It is the same person. It's not saying, oh, a lesser portion. You know, the full Balaram is appearing, and is not, but they have actually seen Sesha on their way to see Krishna, and he's saying that wonderful personality whose all the universes are on his head, but they've just seen he's going to appear as the son of Rahini Balaram. The goddess of fortune will appear as Bhishmaka's daughter Rukmini, as Mahalakshmi. Lord Shiva's consort will appear as Jambavati. Tulasi will be born as Satya. And Vasundara will be born as Satyabhama. Dakshina will appear as Lakshmana. Viraj, that's a sacred river, right? Will appear as Kalindi. Hari will be born as Bhadra. And Janavi, who destroys all sins, will be born as Mitravinda. Appearing as the sons of Rukmini, Kamadev will be known as Prajumna. You, as Brahma, will appear as his son. That will be Aniruddha?
Yes.
The Vasu Drona will be born as Nanda, and Dara will appear as Yashoda. Suchandra will be born as Rishabhanu, and his wife Kalavati will appear in these pastimes as Kirti. From her, Radha will be born. Again and again, I will perform the Rasa dance in Braja with the gopis. A little later in the Gauka Samhita, he says this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my friends, Sri Dharma and Subal will appear in the homes of Nanda and Upananda, Stoka Krishna, Arjun, Amshu, this is Arjun the Gopa, will appear in the homes of Nanda's relatives, my friends, Vishal, Rishabh, Tejasvi, Devaprastha and Varutapa will be born in the families of six relatives of King Vrishabhanu. Lord Brahma asked, who is Nanda? Who is Vrishabhanu, a master of the demigods? Please tell us about Upananda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, these are all cowherd men. Day and night they protect the cows in the villages of the cowherds. Listen as I describe them. The gopas say that Nanda is the master of 900,000 cows, and Upananda is the master of 500,000 cows. They say that Vrishabhanu is the master of 1,000,000 cows, and that at King Nanda's residence there are 10,000,000 cows. Vrishabhanuvara has 5,000,000 cows, and Suchandra and Drona each have the same number. That's a lot of cows. And then just a little extra information. In the additional notes at the end of this chapter, we get this. And this is, Viraraghava Acharya's commentary on verse 23 of this, where we're up to. He says, O demigods, and he says that actually, an extra part that should be there just after that. The text of 23. O demigods, even great sages following the order of Vishnu appeared in the forms of cows and calves to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by delivering milk. And there's a little something from Ananda Brindavan Champu. Sri Nanda, Yashoda and others appeared in Brihadvan, Mahavan before the Lord. The gopis, and other eternally liberated associates appeared after the Lord. Then those who had attained perfection by sadhana, namely the Sutacharis and Municharis, took birth in Vrindavan. And we'll hear all about those. All the varieties of persons, sadhana siddhas, who took birth as the many different groups of gopis. Again, on the same point of nitya siddhas and demigods, this is from at the end of this chapter 1, verses 62 and 63, but because it's on this point, we'll read this, that the inhabitants of Vrindavan headed by Nanda Maharaj and including his associate cowherd men and their wives, were none but denizens of the heavenly planets. O Maharaj Prakrit, best of the descendants of Bharat, and so too were the descendants of the Brishni dynasty headed by Vasudeva and Devaki. And the other women of the headed by Vasudeva and Devaki and the other women of the dynasty of Yadu. The friends, relatives and well-wishers of both Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva, and even those who externally appeared to be followers of Kamsa, were all demigods. In the purport, as previously discussed, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, informed Lord Brahma that Lord Krishna would personally descend to mitigate the suffering on the earth. The Lord ordered all the denizens of the heavenly planets to take birth in different families of the Yadus and Brishni dynasties and in Vrindavan. Now this verse informs us that all the family and friends of the Yadu dynasty, the Brishnu dynasty, Nanda Maharaj and the Gopas descended from the heavenly planets to see the pastimes of the Lord. And of course, it appears that they're demigods, but because of our discussion, we understand it's not exactly like that. Now, in Bhagavad Gita 4.8, it says, the Lord's pastimes consist of paratranaya sadhanam vinishaya duskritam, saving the devotees and killing the demons. To demonstrate these activities, the Lord called for devotees from different parts of his universe. This point from the sixth chapter of the Gita, there are many devotees who are elevated to the higher planetary systems. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. Some devotees, having failed to complete the process of devotional service, so that's, we read that there, so that's that part I quoted before, that some devotees, having failed to complete the process of devotional service, are promoted to the heavenly planets, to which the pious are elevated, and after enjoying there, oh no, actually I didn't quote this one, this is a different Bible. And after enjoying there, they may be directly promoted to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. The imprisonment and release of Vasudeva and the killing of various demons were all manifestations of the pastimes of the Lord, and because the devotees would be pleased to see these activities personally, they were all invited to take birth as friends and relatives of these families. As confirmed in the prayers of Kunti, 1.8.19, the Lord was to play the part of a demon killer and a friend, son and brother to his devotees, and thus these devotees were all summoned. So many devotees were summoned to participate, and some of the demigods were able to not necessarily participate, but see the Lord fulfill his promise in the Gita, that I descend to annihilate the miscreants. So they needed to see that. Yes, here is Krishna. He looks like an ordinary person, but he is the Supreme Person of Godhead, who always appear, and he has done what the Lord comes to do, therefore he is the Lord. So that actually gives the demigods also, who witness to some degree or another, the opportunity to say, yes, that is God, like that. So that's another little dimension there. And on that verse there, Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, he's saying that these verses were spoken by Sukadevi Goswami, or they can be taken as the words of Narada to Kamsa. So we know at the end of this chapter, I think it's the end of this chapter, Narada, he comes and says, oh, you know, all these demigods, your enemies, have taken birth, you know. So he wanted to precipitate the pastimes of the Lord. So, and in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says this, at that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudeva and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very eager to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that in Vrindavan, personalities like Nanda Maharaj and all other cowherd men and their wives, and on the other side, Vasudeva, his father Shurasena and all his relatives, born in the family of Vrishnu, and of the Yadu dynasty, along with all their friends and well-wishers, were actually demigods. So he didn't say they're all Nitya Siddhas. And, you know, he could say they're demigods. Oh, this Kartikeya, that's something. This one, that's like that. Is it? So also to facilitate the part, there's another aspect to, you know, materialistic persons seeing them as just demigods, but not to be known that they are, you know, eternal associates. That's it. Narada warned Kamsa to be careful of them, since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons are always afraid of demigods. Right? And, So, next week, when we come back, we're going to hear more of that story of Gagamuni, and from the Bhagavatam, and a little bit from about the nature of all the gopis and sadhana siddhas, especially the gopis who appeared as associates in Lord.
Kamsa was also a demigod?
What's that?
Kamsa was also a demigod?
No, he's a demon.
Kamsa, that's a religion.
What's that? No, the associates of Kamsa, but not Kamsa himself.
Kamsa was a demon.
It says that Narada warned Kamsa to be careful of them, since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons were always afraid of the demigods. But it does say that that part about Kamsa, yeah, where was that?
Even those who externally help the activities of Kamsa belong to the higher class.
That's right.
Association of karma.
That's
Kamsa.
Right. Yeah, the associates of Kamsa, not Kamsa himself. Yeah, that's right. That when Krishna appears as Vamana, at that stage it's easier to understand Vamana. You know, other different avatars of the Lord, of all of them, Krishna is the most difficult to understand because he appears in a human form. Yeah. But
Rama and Parshuram also appeared in human form.
They do, you know, Krishna and his girlfriend, you know, Ram had one wife,
yeah.
And, you know, Krishna did a lot of things that make it, you know, he appeared to be a lusty little boy, you know, and as a child, you know, like he would do all sorts of naughty things, you know, to Mother Yashoda and like that, so, you know.
The one thing I found a little controversial today is you said he asked Shiva's consort, which would be Shiva's wife, to be born as his wife, Jambavati. That's a bit controversial, isn't it? She says, generally, like they say, Parvati is his sister, Vishnu's sister.
Yeah, well, basically, Jambavati... the Nitya Siddha from the spiritual world will enjoy with Krishna. And those Nitya Siddhas combine with one of the demigods. So the Lord's actually associating with his, the manifestation of his Ladini Shakti. And the Vibhuti aspect so the actual association, Vasudeva and Devaki, let's take Kashyapa and a deity, demigods.
Yeah. Yeah.
They enjoyed the pastimes of the Lord as Vamanadeva. So sometimes the Lord appears amongst the demigods and they get to enjoy the association of the Lord. But they may not enjoy the association, the demigods may not enjoy the association of the Lord as much as the Nitya Siddhas in the same association. So for instance...
It's not ordinary.
No. So for instance, there's my wife.
Yeah.
She's come here to the class.
Yeah.
I enjoy a special enjoyment from her presence that you don't taste. Although she's sitting here with all of us, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, although the demigods and the Nitya Siddhas are together, the Nitya Siddhas are experiencing something which the demigod doesn't necessarily taste.
Yeah, okay.
And nor does Krishna involve them in.
Yeah.
And he has his way of keeping things in the proper order. Yeah? Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like someone asked me, I don't know if it's like this, but it reminded me of this. Somebody asked me, is it Raghunath Das Goswami who... He's in the Jagannath Gardens preparing the dances. Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it Raghunath?
Yeah, yeah. It's Ramananda Raya.
Ramananda Raya, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, they said to me, I can't get over the fact that he's so intimately close.
Oh, he's dressing them.
Connected
them
with
them
these
them.
Girls,
yeah.
It just seems wrong, but it's like I said, you're looking at it from a material perspective, from where we stand in our body's not right now, not from a spiritual perspective or what qualities that he possesses to be able to do that, or who he is actually in the spiritual world.
So he's enjoying an aspect of associating with Lord Jagannath because he's, dressing those dancing girls and entertainers for the pleasure of Jagannath. He's enjoying an aspect of that service to Jagannath that no one else is enjoying.
Yeah.
He's just on a whole different level. And others are experiencing something even a little shocking on a material platform and so many different things. But so one can be in the same place but not necessarily, privy to the same experiences.
Yeah.
We know that, when we put Jagannath to bed upstairs in the Rath Yatra, at the end of the Snana Yatra, the bathing ceremony, he gets a cold, so he says. But, I asked, Jayapataka Swami, we were standing up there, and they were putting Jagannath. I said, "So what actually happens, they're staying here for a couple of weeks?" And he said, "The Lord enjoys, confidential pastimes with his, shaktis, his spiritual consorts." And we're here, the Vajaris, someone bringing in, the drinks, the hot drinks and so many things. But, we're literally, and we're devotees, but, there's an aspect that You can be in the same place, the Lord can have pastimes in the presence of others that they just don't connect with, they don't see. Just like the Lord's having pastimes there. We're at the temple every day.
Yes.
We didn't see anything.
No.
So, you know, they're a little mysterious, but everything's above board.
Okay. All right. Yeah, but okay. Well, you told us who took birth is who, so that was fun. But there was
Shiva,
though.
No, we'll come back to
that. That's the one you're hiding still.
I think so,
right?
Yeah. I'm pretty
that's
sure.
His wife and son.
If it's not there, I'm going to write something in there.
That's the best of
I'm joking. Don't quote me on that.
We know whenever Shiva comes, there's like, he comes in a pretty, he's pretty much magnificent in his own way.
If it's not there, I'm going to find it.
Because I've heard of Hanuman, that's why I'm curious now of which form of Shiva was around in Mahabharata.
Mm. We'll get back. I think he actually appeared as an Amsa, as Ashwatthama.
Who?
Or maybe Ashwatthama. As an Amsa, he appeared as...
I think they said that he...
Who appeared as
that? Shiva.
Ashwatthama, yeah.
Yeah. From memory, but it's there. So it is there, because I just remembered. All right, so yes. Okay, we'll see you next week, and we'll continue where we left off. Hare Krishna. Yes. 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 Who do you work for?
For the bank.
Yeah, but
I'm part of MLC. MLC is separating now, and so it has become a much smaller company.
Right.
They're going to cut a lot of stuff, which then means I'm one of the staff that was finding it. To be honest, this was just a stepping stone, so I'm not attached to the job per se, but I don't want to be without the job.
That's right, yeah.
So I've got possibly about 4 to 6 weeks before the